When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel Taluk.
It's your boy, Double H.
We do the podcast every Tuesday. Remember to follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at Talking Tactics. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a follow. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. It's free. Yeah, it's free. Leave us a five-star review, and we'll read it on the show. We don't charge you for this thing.
Help us, man. What the
Yeah, and if you do want to help us out, now, I don't know why I need the accusatory tone. If you want to help us out.
We actually want to sound very aggressive.
If you want to help us out monetarily, we have a Patreon account, patreon.com/talkingtactics, $3 a month. I encourage everybody to help us out. If we get to a certain number, we've promised that we are going to watch every episode of The Wire.
We made that promise? When did we make that promise?
A couple years ago? I don't
so
know.
So what? I'm supposed to keep a promise I made it after a year? Yeah. After a year, a promise loses its value. So,
all right, let's start in Spain. Atletico, can they be caught? They are currently 10 points ahead of second place with a game in hand. They have 50 points. Barcelona have 40 points. I don't know when the last time. They've only lost one game this entire season.
So Real Madrid.
Do you remember when they lost to Madrid? And people were like, ooh, this is where they slipped.
Then Real Madrid said, nah, chill, hold my beer. Levante, Granada, Lugo, you know?
Yeah, that hasn't happened yet. So, do you think Atletico can be caught? I don't think they can be caught.
It would be a shock if they get... I think you're dealing with a different beast here. You're dealing with a different beast here. For me, I think the only thing that can catch them right now, as shocking as it is Barcelona. Barca have just sort of... They found their groove from somewhere. But even still, because Barcelona are just slowly, slowly declining from what they once were, I don't think they have the consistency to catch this up. If they win their game in hand, that's 12... That's
13.
13 points. Yep. The heck?
It's interesting that their goal numbers are either greater or commensurate with Barcelona and Madrid, but their defensive record is exceptionally better, almost twice as good.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're scoring on with the clip of the two bigger teams, you would say, but their defensive record hasn't suffered in order to get those goals. And they still have a game in hand, as you say. So I'm seeing a lot of people say, people who are very in tune with Spanish football, they're saying, you know, Simeone's different in the sense that with a cushion like this, he's allowing his team to play freer. I guess if your objective is, okay, let's get top four, top three, if we can challenge, all right, let's be a little bit more defensively resolute. But if you have the benefit of a 10-point lead, perhaps a 13-point lead, you can kind of allow the Yao Felixes of the world and the Luis Suarez's of the world to just be a little bit more open and expansive with their football, which I think benefits the team as a whole. It's probably why you can have a similar goal tally to a Barcelona. It's just really weird because normally England is already decided. Germany's already decided. France already decided. Italy's already decided. And then Spain is the one where it's like, you know, Barcelona, Madrid, they'll kind of have a title race into the end of the season. If you look around the tables of the leagues, Barcelona and Madrid falling off has kind of let La Liga get ahead to a point where it's like, that one's already finished, kind of. And we can divert our attention elsewhere. So it's flipped.
Because before the season started, the talk was, okay, we're not going to be Real Barcelona, but can Real defend their title? Barcelona, what are they going to do with the whole Messi mishap that happened in the summer? Nobody was talking about Atletico, because remember, we were saying that João Felix maybe doesn't fit into this Atletico team because they don't play with enough flair and they're not attacking enough. So maybe he needs to move to another team that will best suits the kind of player that he is. They're not there to bust the cannibal. So when they now got Cannibal Suarez, and now Simeone has been like, I see how good this kid is. This could be the next big thing, João Felix. So let me actually have better balance between my vibe, which is defense, and also let this team play a little. You know, we've got Carrasco. Let's see what Thomas Lamar can do. Okay, mm-hmm. João Felix, let's see what you can do. Okay, Llorente, come on. So the balance, because I told you, I watched the game against Valencia. I said, let me just watch these guys against Valencia. It's a damn good team, man. It's a Chelsea, really good team.
Chelsea, beware.
I don't know, man.
It's like the one team Chelsea didn't want to get. That's the one they got.
No, but I think, like, when you look at the kind of ball Suarez, man, it's like...
The free kick that he had?
Whew. Oh, crazy. No, like, but it's like...
He learned that from, the same technique. It looked like a Messi free kick, just kind of mirrored because it's right-footed and stuff.
But see, the thing about that is that I still say it would be the biggest F you if Atletico win La Liga and he's top scorer.
Because they wanted to get rid of him. Bartomeu, man. Trash guy. Speaking of, the numbers of Messi's contract came out. I've been seeing crazy numbers from Messi's contract in the past of like, he's getting paid $50 million a year. He's getting paid $40 million a year. Whatever the case may be. The numbers that came out like the other day, it says Lionel Messi and Barcelona will take legal action against Spanish newspaper El Mundo after it released the leaked details of the forward's record-breaking contract on Sunday. El Mundo published documents relating to Messi's four-year deal signed in 2017 and gave an intricate breakdown of the 555 million euros he would receive if all add-ons were met. The report claimed that Messi's contract is the biggest ever signed by an athlete. So if we do the add-ons and all that kind of stuff, let's divide 550 by 4. It's about 140 million euros if he gets all of the clauses and stuff a year. So this is why whenever we talked about if Messi leaves for free, should he leave for free? I mean, he's not leaving for free because the wages that are on Barcelona's books, imagine that's a Coutinho every year in wages. So just removing that off their wage bill frees up a lot of cash, I would presume, for Barcelona to do what they need to do in order to rebuild. So,
can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is Messi at all to blame?
No. If they do you know who you're talking to? If they give, if that's the money that they offer, I'm surprised he didn't get more.
Double it, triple it, who cares?
Okay. Like,
people say that, we gave you everything. We helped when you were young and so forth. We were stronger financially. Can you take a wage cut? Do us a solid.
This is his contract at 31. What would his contract after the 2012 season have looked like? Or his contract season after the treble in 2015? What would that have looked like? This is the contract that we know. This isn't the contract that was there before. It's possible that he's taken a wage cut. Just because of older age or instead of a five-year deal, he took a four-year deal, things like that. We don't know what he was making in the past. Well, and you have to think about it like this. Barcelona didn't have to pay a transfer fee for the guy. It's not like the whole player amortization thing. Like, it's just wages. That's all they've had to pay for this guy. And obviously the treatment when he was a kid. But it's just wages that they're having to pay the guy. You don't have to take into account, we had to pay $250 million for this guy from whatever team he would have been on before. Like, he's from the academy.
Do you see they spent over 700 million on players? So I think it was like 756. But my thing though is that, first of all, for Barcelona, you messed up financially because you screwed up with the fact of, first of all, that offering that wage is cool if you know what you're going to recoup. Okay, we're giving you X, we know that you're going to give us Y, based off your sponsorships and what and the value your brand brings in off the pitch.
Yeah.
But the issue for Barcelona is how you've mismanaged your finances. Because again, like, that number looks crazy. It's crazy. But if you now look at that number and then, we're going to get 1.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, then it's a lot, but still you're going to get 1.2 billion in return. You know, so sort of like in movies where, Man, this thing cost 200 million to make, but we made 8 billion at the box office. We have like a 600, 700 thingy. So, but the issue is how much you wasted on these players and also other players' wages as well. You see, because we're having a discussion about this with the guy. Okay, man, how could he? Nobody should ever be paid that much, but it's supply and demand. Yes, in a vacuum, it is ridiculous to be paid that much. And especially during COVID, you would look at that and be like, oh my God, what? How? But the money exists. They're not just giving it out of thin air because his value generates that. You know, his value generates the opportunity for you to give him that 555 because you know how much you're going to make off the freaking dude.
Do you know what I immediately thought when I...
No, that was it.
Do you know what I immediately thought when I saw those numbers? And I saw when the contract was signed. I thought of Neymar. And I was like, did Neymar have an idea of what Messi's contract was? And they wouldn't give him something on that level. So in 2017, he was just like, all right, I'll go PSG. Like, I wonder if that could be more of a catalyst. Because I've always thought the remontada against PSG, Messi was the one that got the credit. Neymar was basically the one that did the heavy lifting in that second leg. So he just thought, let's just get out of here because I can never be my own guy. What if it was just more about cash? And he saw, like, Messi's getting paid $2 million a week. You guys are only offering me X amount, even though on the pitch I'm kind of doing not as much as him, but somewhere comparable. Maybe it's my time to go to PSG and get my own bag. That's what I thought. I was like, is that the reason why Neymar left? It's an agent's job to know what other people make, so then they can give you the contract that's commensurate with what you're worth. So I wonder if he had an idea of Messi's on 2 million euros a week and they only want to give me 500,000. Are they saying that he's four times the player that I am? Doesn't look like it on the pitch. Who's willing to pay me? And I'll bet you if the PSG contract numbers came out, you'd be like, damn, he's on blah, blah, blah. Or he has blah, blah, blah and assets and this and that. So, yeah, that's the first thing I thought about. But it's just pocket checking at the end of the day. I don't care about Messi's money. Well, I care about how it affects Barcelona moving forward. I suppose Messi leaves and then you have, oh, wow. So we have 140 million euros that we otherwise wouldn't have. All right. But then does a Griezmann get an idea that, well, I want a pay raise? Does Dembele get an idea? I want a pay raise. Like, how does this trickle down into the squad when they realize Messi's like 10 times getting paid 10 times what they're getting?
But my thing though is,
you would think 200,000 euros a week would be an amazing wage, but then you realize somebody's making like 11, 12 times what that is. It's like, is he doing 12 times more than I'm doing? But then it's like, obviously, as you lay out the idea of, you know, brand ambassador and the Messi branding has to count for something. I guess that appears in the wages.
What's your take on El Mundo publishing that on the front page? Because my thing is that it's a narrative thing. Because if Barcelona are to go bankrupt, Spain is losing a massive aspect of their tourism. A lot of people, they come to Spain to look at the Camp Nou. They come to Spain because they want to just see the Barcelona stadium, buy the Barcelona jersey and so forth. So if they go bankrupt, let's try and pin the blame on someone. Hey, let's pin the blame on the Argentine dude who's eventually going to leave this club, who got paid over 500 million over the space of 3 years. Because again, the phrasing was obviously the thing and the kind of wages that is crippling Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because we've always talked about Barcelona's wage bill. I don't think we understood the extent to which the wages were crippling them, but we understood that wages were crippling them. Now we have like some numbers to go with it. And that he's just one guy. There's probably a reason why you want to get rid of Suarez, because he's probably on a lot of money, not that much. But I think journalistically, if you have the story and it's correct, then you publish it. If it comes out that the numbers that they published were false, then...
So you don't think that is immoral or unethical to publish what somebody is earning if they didn't disclose it? It's not because you're right. Like,
I understand your question. It is kind of uncomfortable that you can Google what somebody makes and they don't have any say. Like, if it's a politician or somebody who's getting paid with public tax dollars, then I think you deserve to know, okay, the president's getting paid this much, the prime minister's getting paid that much, the secretary of defense, secretary of state, home minister, XYZ. Like, you probably deserve to know that. But football, it's a bit weird because everything is published. So people's contracts, like in all sports, people's contracts are published. This player has this contract with X amount of money guaranteed, blah, blah, blah. I don't know why. People are just kind of interested in, again, pocket checking.
Did you ever watch MTV Cribs?
Yeah.
People love to know or see things they can't have. Oh my gosh, he goes 200 million. Oh my gosh, he does 200 million. And people always love that. Same thing with Cribs. People love to view things that they can't have. Like, look how amazing their house. Look at how rich they are. Look at how many swimming pools they have. Look how many cars they have. Look at how many mansions they have, how many rooms they have, and so forth. So that's just, it's an obsession.
Do you think that we deserve to know a transfer fee? If I had to guess. Back in the day, a lot of these clubs would have been owned or operated by people who were intimately regular people who are intimately involved with the finances. Like a group of fans would buy a club or have an ownership stake in the club. So you would feel intimately attached with what the club is up to. So how much did we pay for X player to come in? How much are we paying him per week? All that kind of thing. That would trickle into the fans' consciousness, I suppose. So perhaps this is a legacy of what was happening in the 1800s, early 1900s, where, so we bought this guy for what would be a lot of money in 1910, like
500 gold,
100 pounds,
10 shillings.
Oh, but look, no,
those times were wild, man.
So God. I'm thinking perhaps like in 1910, if a player's worth 100 pounds or so, like that 100 pounds has to come from somewhere. It's probably the people who support the club collecting their money together and giving it to who they elected as a chairman. And then that goes forward. And then that news needs to be made public. So then how much are we paying him a week? Then that's made public. Now we look at it, oh, the owner does all of this, or the director of football or whatever it is controls all of that. But perhaps that's where it comes from, where people want to know how much you're on because it's a reflection of what the club is up to, and because I support this club. It's weird how people kind of, we spent X amount. How much are we paying him? You guys spent, you know, like when people want to give, what's a player? Arsenal trash. Oh, you guys spent blah, blah, blah on Pepe. No, what do you mean I spent? It was the club that spent. I didn't have anything to do with that. So why do you care that, oh, it's a shame that you spent 50 million on Torres? It's not my money. It's Roman Abramovich's money. I don't care what he does with his money.
No, the Roman, but like, Roman it's in the literal sense, though. That's the thing. It's not in the literal sense. It is.
It is. It's in the idea that because you support this particular institution, the decisions that they make reflect on you. So if Chelsea choose to spend 50 million on Fernando Torres and it flops, then because you support the institution that is Chelsea Football Club, that means you've made a mistake in your loyalty. Therefore, it's something to make fun of you about, right? So if Hazard goes to Real Madrid and flops, Real Madrid spent 100 million. Then Chelsea fans will be like, ah, ha, ha, we got you. You made no money off the sale. You got nothing from the sale, but you feel good. So I think that's probably a legacy of how football originally was constructed. So that's why we know or would want to know the wages. So when you ask me, is it fair to know what Messi's on? Probably not in an ideal world. I don't think anybody deserves to know what's in your bank account unless you feel like telling them, unless, as I said, you're being paid with public money. However, the foundations of kind of football reporting, football journalism, the economics of the sport, it is traditional to kind of know how much a player's on, how much the transfer fee was, unless you can keep it hidden with like undisclosed and all that kind of stuff. But somebody's going to try to figure it out because the fans want to know if it's a good reflection of them or not.
How about, I don't really care. No, because like, it's like, okay, Kepa, you spend 75 million on Kepa. I'm like,
you don't feel a way about that?
No.
Chelsea Football Club spent 75 million on
Have you seen what Roman Abramovich looks like? Just pull up a picture of Roman Abramovich and look at his face. Do you think does that look like a guy who is stressed? No.
But see, that's the banter element of the sport. Moving on. Zidane. It's been leaked, suggested that this is going to be Zidane's last season at Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think they said only if he wins the Champions League can he be saved.
Well.
That's not happening, bro.
I think we know who's going to win it now. They lost to Levante, I believe, 2-1. Edgar Militao got sent off early in the game. Asensio scored.
Great pass. Toni Kroos with a super pass.
I saw people saying, Militao's gone. We'll still win. It doesn't matter. And then Levante got two goals. The 10 men couldn't defend for the rest of the game. Did you watch? How was Eden?
I mean, you know what? I think it would have been interesting if it was 11v11. I think 11v11, you could see how he was slowly getting into the game, linking up and everything. And 11v10, the whole game changed. The whole game changed. And I think Real had to be a lot more compact. And they were looking good and everything. But based on Zidane's tactics, you always knew that it would be an eventuality that Levante would just get their chances and then win the game, man. So
do you see any future for Zidane at Madrid? I would feel like if he wasn't Zidane already, they'd probably try to get rid of him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
But like, again, this is like Frank Lampard again, but just with far, far, far more clout.
I was just about to use that because, see, this is what I always even said to Real Madrid fans, that, man, I envy how you guys move. Because for Real Madrid, no player is bigger than the club. When these guys did what they did to Cristiano, I said, okay, this club is different.
Zidane is close to being bigger than Madrid.
Yeah. No. But
Zidane might be bigger than Madrid.
No, he is. You could say he is because he's a freaking horseman. So for Perez, he's like, you know what? I know what you've done as a club and so forth, but Real Madrid, this institution, is bigger than any one player. Doesn't matter what you've done for them. But you know what it is? It's a culture thing. See, living in England and so forth, English people, they live and die and pride themselves on loyalty. English people, they will die for their loyalty. Basically, English people, they'd rather die than change. The tradition of, this is how we are, I will always support you. It's what they were, just what Drake was even saying, that Drake is like, man, my most devout fans are my UK fans. Like, English people, the way that they support something is unlike any group of people that you'll ever encounter, you know. So, but for other countries, especially if you're expecting, they're like, no, it's like, we're not about that. It's like, okay, if you don't do good, you're out. People, and they will refuse to, and they will always continue to refuse to, and it's how it is. He did that. 2016, yep. 2017, 2018. He that is an unprecedented.
Even last season, he won the league.
But still, that whole thing of three Champions Leagues in a row,
yeah,
I don't think we'll ever see that in our lifetime. We still haven't yet seen a team defend their title in the Champions League other than Real Madrid, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think Barna are going to do it. So if I think for Zidane is that you've already made your statements both as a player and a manager. All that's left for you is do something with France.
Yep.
But you know what? I've always felt that for Zidane, after he headbutted Materazzi in the chest, I think he cut ties with France.
Do you know what I want to see? Go manage Algeria in an Africa.
Oh, yeah.
That would be like connecting all the dots for him, yeah. I think. And I think they probably have a team to win it again.
And just quickly on that, like, I just wish that they could have made like an exception to the international rule and Benzema can switch to Algeria.
Yeah. Benzema should be clear. In all the talk of who's the best striker of the generation, Lewandowski. Yeah. Benzema really should be clear. And the fact that he had to play with Cristiano for like 10 years or however long it was. Somebody who's just, I'm not passing to you. You mean I can shoot from 20 yards instead of give you a tap in? I think I'm going to shoot from 20 yards.
No, because imagine if we have a situation where Benzema plays in 2016, they win the Euros. Cristiano doesn't win the Euros. He plays in 2018, they win the World Cup. And let's just say he's the top scorer at that World Cup. It's a different conversation.
He's clear. He's the best of the generation. Yeah. Then again, I say he plays with Cristiano, but then I do have to take into account playing with Cristiano does give you the platform to win those Champions Leagues.
Mm.
So damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess. But the international stuff, what could have been? So let's go to England. Manchester United 0, Arsenal 0. Can I admit that I didn't watch it? Bad Daniel. I'll assume, have hope, you tuned in to... you see, from a lot of Manchester United fans that I talk to, they don't even hate Manchester City like that. The team that they really despise is Arsenal. Especially because I guess a lot of the Manchester United fans that I'm in contact with are like black people from London. Like, do you know any Manchester United fans who are from Manchester?
No.
But I'm sure you know a lot that are from London. So like the beef between just the London vibe, I guess.
Yeah. But you see, United is like the UN. You know, United's fans are like the UN. Like, literally, you get guys from all over. That's how they've always been.
Anybody. So, what did you think? Can we take anything from the game? I think United have dropped 7 points in the last three games or four games.
For me, I feel that, you know, United were never in the title race. You know, they were never in the title running. And I think that what you saw from United fans was years of frustration. Years of success after success after success. And ever since Moyes, embarrassment upon embarrassment upon embarrassment and so forth. So just to have that glimmer of, oh my gosh, wow, something that we've not been since 2011, like of potentially winning the league, guys were like, oh my gosh, this is it, we're back. Man United are back. And I was like, guys, hold your horses. This is still only going to soak shit. this is still a team who don't really have the personnel or so forth to do what Man City and Liverpool can. Don't be very wary with how you're just abusing Liverpool and Klopp and saying these guys are done, because once these guys get hitting, they're off. And you cannot be as consistent as Liverpool can be when Liverpool really gets into their groove. Mm. So for United, I just think like it's commendable how well they've done so far this season. But they were never in the title race. They were never, realistically speaking, they were not a team to be taken seriously with regards to title aspirations. That was never on the cards.
I can allow you to get gassed if your team hasn't been in first place since however long, in like after a certain amount of games. So I can allow you that, especially if you're used to winning and it's been so long. But yeah, realistically, I think top four was their aim. So for them to be in first, it's like, wow, I think we're kind of overshooting what we thought we were aiming for. I can accept you being happy in a moment where you didn't think you'd get where you are. So
yeah. No, but also for Arsenal, man, I think I'm liking the look of Arsenal. And I think they brought off Martinelli because I think they were trying to save him because he just come back from injury. But Smith Rowe, Martinelli, Saka, that kind of young crew they have, they look good. And also Smith Rowe looks good, man. You know, looks good. So I just think, yeah. You can chat everything back to that Chelsea game for Arsenal. Ever since that Chelsea game, the team has just been completely transformed.
We need to have a conversation soon about Willian. I'm not ready to have it yet, but we need
worst
to have
signing it. In the last 10 years or
no,
20
no, no,
years?
No, no, no. I'm not willing to discuss 30? This.
40? 45?
I'm not yet willing to discuss it, but it has to be discussed.
But let's discuss it now.
I have to watch him play in order to have the discussion.
I'm hearing very bad
things about Willian. But because I didn't watch the game, I don't feel prepared yet.
He's been trash. It is what it is. He's been trash and it's getting paid.
I don't know if he's trash. You guys are saying he's trash, but I need to watch an Arsenal match.
Take a word for it. The guy has not done anything since he has joined.
Chelsea fans were telling me he was trash, and I had explanations for why that might be. So now I need to watch Arsenal and see if I have an explanation for why that might be. Or, you know, perhaps everybody's right. And I am on my Willian Island by myself. That's fine. That's fine. Okay, Spurs lost to Brighton. People have been getting in my mentions saying, are you going to apologize for saying Mourinho was the GOAT? You know, are you ready to throw some dirt on the guy? He's finished. Woo. I'm saying let's wait until the League Cup final, because all of this will go away if he's holding up that weird-looking trophy. Just as an aside, I don't like the way the League Cup looks. The FA Cup looks kind of cool. Premier League trophy looks kind of cool. Champions League, best-looking trophy I think ever. League Cup.
What? Whoa. No. That was better-looking than the World Cup?
The World Cup isn't a cup. The World Cup is like a gold ball.
He said the best-looking trophy.
True. I meant cup.
Well, no, that's just cheap. It's a freaking trophy.
It's called the World Cup, but it's not a cup. That annoys me. That would be like
saying...
But it's
called the Champions League trophy.
Imagine if the Charity Shield wasn't a shield that they gave you. Imagine if it was like...
It's a trophy.
It doesn't match the words.
So you're saying that it cannot... But who cares about...
I'm saying the best looking cup in football is the Champions League.
What do people normally denotes to that Champions League, cup or trophy? It's a trophy. That is what it is. So I'm going to ask you the question. What is the best looking trophy in football?
Oh, the NBA trophy is probably my favorite
looking trophy. Yeah, that's all right, though. A bit much, but still.
Low-key, Europa League's pretty cool.
The UEFA Cup was nice, though. And is it the same one they have for Europa League than the one they have for Europa Cup?
Of course, the coolest looking trophy is the World Cup one, yeah, because it's gold.
No.
Like, it's very tiny, and the way it looks, people holding up the globe and stuff.
The Jules Rimet trophy, the Jules Rimet trophy was gold as well. Trash. That thing was trash. But the World Cup, I mean, whoever constructed that thing, that's his
thing. Do you know the story behind that thing? Like, it got stolen? Like, the Jules Rimet trophy? Like, it's stolen. Nobody knows where it is. Nobody. And I think the last time they used it was 1966. Nobody knows where it is. So, anyway. But yeah, the best-looking cup is the Champions League. But my larger point is the League Cup looks trash. But if Mourinho is holding that up come next month or whenever it is, all of you guys will just have to be quiet and creep back into your holes And just wait until the next time Spurs become Spurs.
He's not winning that trophy. You do know that though.
I'm saying if he wins it,
there is no if. They're not beating Man City. I don't know what you're saying. If they're not beating Man City,
stop with your juju, okay?
No. Okay, I was wondering that this is not reverse psychology.
Says this is not reverse psychology, then isn't that in itself reverse psychology?
No. But I'm telling you now that okay, this is not reverse psychology. So double negative.
So this is not. You might be right, but in the event that Mourinho wins the League Cup, then all of this is irrelevant. They could finish 12th. They have a trophy for the first time since 2008 or 2007, and it's Mourinho's. So let's just wait and see. And he beats Pep. City haven't lost in like 5 months or however long it is. Let's just wait and see.
They're not beating Man City. I don't know what you want to, but they're not beating Man City.
Speaking of Manchester City, they're now at the top of the Premier League table. They have a game in hand. Is it their title to lose?
Yeah. Because for me, I always knew that Liverpool would get back on form and sort of. But City look probably the best they've ever looked. When they did 100 points, it was an amazing attacking team. But I think defensively, they are really good right now. Like, I think they hardly concede. Didn't they concede, like one goal in the group stages or something in the Champions League?
They're a well-rounded team.
Ruben Dias, man. Yep. Ruben Dias. And the reemergence of John Stones.
Yikes.
But see, this whole thing is like, okay, you win. Oh, shit. Okay, you win the Premier League. No, my sandwich almost fell off. Okay, you win the Premier League. Well done. Congrats. Bo Pep, you know what time it is. You know what time it is. You know what this guy you can in the shades and the hats wants from you. You know what he wants. He wants that big boy trophy without Messi. So all this Premier League stuff, it's all cool, all nice. It's solidifies your legacy with regards to the Premier League and England. But it's about the CL, bro. If you can't win the CL without Messi, I'm going to be on your ass, bro.
You know, I just realized a couple of things. Number one, the European Champions chip trophy, that looks good. The AFCON trophy, we need to have a discussion with the continent about how that thing looks. I don't like it. Like, what are those little dots that are... I don't know what those things are, but anyway. Yeah. At least make a final. Can we get him to a final? I don't need... I don't even need you to win it. Bayern, City, wherever you go to next. Can you make a final, Pep? Just a final. Can you stop overthinking semifinals and quarterfinals and round of 16s and just make a final? And then we can discuss winning. But finals. Chelsea. Last week was all about Chelsea, so I don't want to spend too much time here. Chelsea looked better. This was to be expected. I don't agree with you taking the Marcos Alonso wing out of the Brick Academy. This was one game.
Oh, it's gone.
He scored one goal. It was a good goal. But the moment he's played again at left back, the wing will need to be reconstructed. So I think it was premature.
Can I respond to that?
You may.
What you just said is why it's been taken down. Is at left back, he is the owner of a wing at the academy. But with this, what this now shows is that you have to play at left wing back. So if he is played at left back, I will now say, bro, put him as wing back. And then let's now see. You see, people who are bricks, that's your strongest position. So Benteke, you are a striker. That is your strongest position. Phil Jones, you're a defender. That is your strongest position. So you're in your strongest position, you're playing trash. But Alonso can always have an argument as to, okay, you're putting me in the academy, but this is not my strongest position. The strongest position is the wing back. So I'm like, okay, Alonso, you have a point. You have a point.
But we've always known this. It's just that he was so bad. To be honest, Chilwell did not cover himself in glory. And against what game was that? Wolves? He was very, very bad.
Yeah, horrendous.
So, yeah, I just want to say I don't agree with you taking... Is Alonso out of the Brick Academy full stop? Or is just the wing gone?
No, he's out. Like,
He should be suspended. But he should still be on the premises.
Oh, no, you see, yeah. Like, I'll put him in the suspension section. But no, it's the wing is down.
Because
the
trust me. If he will come back, the guy that we know, he'll be back. He'll score a goal. people will lose their minds. Oh my God, a free kick. How could you do it? And it'll go in off the bar or something like that. He'll score a goal against Spurs in the last minute of the game. And people will be like, ah, Marcus Alonso, he's so great. And then for five games in a row, he'll be trash. You'll think, ah, he needs to be out of the team. And then the next game, he'll score a goal, a great free kick or whatever it is. And then I'll see people on my timeline. I think we should try Marcus Alonso as a striker. He's a very frustrating player. He's an evil player, meaning what he does to people's minds. He's a very, I don't know, devious. Liverpool signed some center backs. I feel like that's fair to point out. They got somebody from...
Davis? Preston?
Preston North End.
Mm.
The only other invincible team in English football history, mind you. I think they did that in like 1886.
Don't. Come on. Please don't.
It might have been the first ever top flight English season. I think it was 1880 something. Yeah. So, you know, hey. But yeah. So, you
know. How many black people were in that league? Moving on.
It's hard to know. We can't know. No, I would say zero. No.
I'd second that.
Let us go to Italy. Zlatan against Lukaku. I think we missed that one by a day. I think that happened on Wednesday or something like that. But what did you think about the violence that occurred?
I thought it was humorous. And see, my thing about it is that, look, in my personal view, what Abrahamovich said wasn't racist. That's my view. I can understand how people can view that and claim that it's being racist. But my thing that, in my view, it wasn't racist. Because remember, Lukaku... If it was racist, Lukaku would have reacted to that. But he reacted to him mentioning his mother's name. And Ibra could always use the defense, whether right or wrong, of the story of that he used voodoo with the whole transfer thing. Now, that is on that crazy, stupid, racist owner who used that and put that out into the media saying that they used voodoo. But Ibra can just say, I'm just using this just to mock him because I know him. And we know each other from our United days. So to now say, oh, Ibra is racist, and he sends on the racist come. Like, let's put our focus on John Terry, on Sinisa Mihailovic, on Hristo Stoichkov, you know, on guys who they said it, you know.
Racism didn't flash to me there. It kind of just was like, this guy has inside information because they were teammates for a while. And he probably knows him, and he's going to say something that's going to get on his nerves. You don't bring up someone's mom and just expect them not to say anything, if you know what I mean. So when he says, go ask your mom to do that voodoo, you know what you're doing. It's not about not about the voodoo. It's about your mom doing voodoo, if that makes sense. Lukaku obviously responds. If you know anything about Lukaku and like how he feels about his parents and stuff that's always going to trigger him. So he's like, I'll shoot you in the head. I was like, damn. You, when he said that, I think in Italian or whatever language it was, you could hear people in the crowd go, whoa, whoa, whoa. It was like, hey, man, you're going a bit far. What I didn't like, you ready for this one? Now, this is kind of racial, actually. People were comparing this to Godzilla and King Kong. And I'll let you guess who King Kong was. It could have been Zlatan. Like, you could have made King Kong Zlatan, but no, it had to be Lukaku. So I was like, I know people are gonna compare this. So I typed in Zlatan, Lukaku, King Kong, Godzilla, and I was like, okay, surely there might be one person that's stupid enough to say this, but there can't be thousands or hundreds of people. But sure enough, Ibra versus Lukaku is like King Kong against Godzilla. And then you look at like, okay, so who do you say first? So they said Lukaku, then they said Ibra, then King Kong versus Godzilla. So that obviously you're saying Lukaku is King Kong. I was like, I don't know why I expected people to not compare a black man to a giant ape, but I felt disappointed in myself. Of course they're gonna do that, Daniel. Why would you expect any different?
My thing, it shows you the racism. Why are you bringing Godzilla and King Kong? Do you know how many, what's it called? You can have, okay, Matchman against Hulk Hogan.
Batman, Superman.
And Batman versus Superman. I mean, what's it called? Wolverine against Sabretooth. It's like, why are you, because you want to use some, you see how tricky racist people are. So basically.
I don't think it's conscious. No. It's just embedded into.
It's fully embedded because basically you want to just call him an ape. But you want to be able to cover your ass.
It's,
if I now call you up on it, You were like, oh man, stop bringing the race card. Godzilla versus King Kong. It's the new movie coming out. It's a battle thing. And, you know, we're just likening it to Godzilla versus King Kong. I said, well, why Godzilla for King Kong? Why?
No, it's okay. Why are you picking Lukaku to be the King Kong? How come he can't be Godzilla?
Well, they can say because Ibra calls himself a god. So you see how they can get out? There's always a get out card. There's always a get out card. Man. There's always a get out card.
Yeah, I was just like, I did the Twitter search and I was like, nobody will be that dumb. But, you know, Bayern 1-4-1, Dortmund 1-3-1. I have a problem. And I decided this. I don't know when I decided this. I think it was Mönchengladbach against Dortmund the other week. And we just didn't discuss it last week because we were talking about Frank Lampard being relieved of his duties. I'm dividing all Bundesliga goal numbers by two.
But why the number of two? Why two? Why that number?
Because I feel like three is going a bit too far.
No, but how did you deduce and why? How did you land on two? Or is it just you just randomly just said two? Why two?
Because I'm just dividing by two. So it's like if I divide 14 by two, that's 7 goals in 13 games. That's still a respectable. That's better than 1 and 2. A top flight striker would be able to do that. You know, still good numbers. But the amount of just poor defending you see in Bundesliga games.
So you're saying Bayern couldn't do this in the Premier League. That's what you're saying.
Bayern is tricky because I think, put it this way. If Haaland has 14 goals in that amount of games, and I'm dividing by two, Lewandowski has 24 goals this season. So if I divide that by two, he's still scoring like a goal a game or like close to a goal a game. It's just, I don't know what to do with the Bundesliga goal numbers. And then I look at players like Timo Werner who are coming to the Premier League. Like, they're touted as being, oh, this is the next great goal scorer. When was the last time he scored for Chelsea? If you put him back in Bundesliga, he'd have probably a goal a game. So I don't know what to do with their numbers. So just for now, until further notice, to be determined, I don't know when this will stop, but I need to figure out the system. Maybe I need to divide it by 1.5 rather than 2, and maybe that's a bit more honest. But yeah, I don't believe that Lewandowski... Well, see, Lewandowski's tricky. But then again, if we look at his international record, perhaps it's not as tricky. How believable is the Bundesliga really? That's all I'm saying.
It's one of those things that it's hard for us to know because it's like you can use the example of look at Kai Havertz and Timo Werner and how they've struggled. But at the same time, look at what Bayern did to Lyon. Look at what Bayern did to Barcelona.
There are examples of Bayern crushing everybody. So obviously, if I say, oh, I'll divide Lewandowski's numbers by two, then somebody will come, well, against Tottenham, he did this. Against Chelsea, he did that. Against Arsenal, he did this. We get that. They kill English teams in the Champions League. I understand that. But game to game, I wonder, could Haaland get this score at this clip in a different league? Not even the Premier League. I'm just talking like France or Portugal. I don't know. But there's something clearly about the Bundesliga. If you're a good goal scorer, you will score so many goals. And then I have people saying, not a lot of players score above 20 goals in a Bundesliga season. I was like, bro, they play 34 games in a season. They don't play 38.
Mm.
Imagine if you gave Lewandowski 4 more games. Give him 4 more games. How many goals do you think he scored in those 4 games? 5, 6? Add that to the number. Haaland will score 4 or 5 more goals in those 4 games. Or put that in your math as well, then.
So basically, you don't raise the Bundesliga. You think it's basically a fugazi.
No, if I had a child that I was trying to do Project Mbappe with, as has been denoted by many people our age, go to Germany. They're the best. It's the best league to develop. It's not about how good the league is. It's just about how the defending is. It's not Italy. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, it's a goal in Italy is worth more to me than a goal in Germany. I don't think that's an outlandish statement, given the way that the Italians prioritize defense and defending. German football doesn't seem to appreciate that aspect of the game as much. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about football, that you go to different places and there's a different spice, a different flavor, a different style. That's cool. But the goal numbers for me, there has to be a little bit of, you know, just some deduction.
I think the Bundesliga, hence why the games are so entertaining, is like it's very open.
Yeah.
The games are very open and there's very, hence why it's a good place for a young player to develop because they're like, no, everyone just plays unhinged, take off the shackles, just go out and express yourself, you know, which is why that has always been what was held against Lewandowski. Like if he had never won the Champions League, guys would always say, how can we put you in the Benzema, Cannibal Suarez conversation if Ole can give me a Bundesliga goal hauls and so forth?
Goal hauls.
But if by him winning the Champions League now, it's like a high. At least he has that in his pockets. But yeah, I think if we now look at the entirety of everything, Benzema and Cannibal Suarez, and even Aguero can always say, well, put us in the Bundesliga and we'd get as many goals as Lewandowski. That could always be their argument. So,
and see, I've always put a La Liga tax on as well. That Messi and Ronaldo scoring 50, 60, 40, 50, 60 goals a season. I'm putting a tax on that league as well. I don't know. It's not divided by two. I don't believe that.
Mm.
But maybe divide by like 1.3, 1.4, 1.5 somewhere.
Which is why I don't respect that 700 and something goals Cristiano has scored. Because
I think,
in La Liga, give me a break.
Italy should be the baseline. Like if you score a goal in Italy, that is one goal. And then for every other league, you add a 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. So Premier League might be 1.3. La Liga might be 1.5. Bundesliga might be 1.6. France, I'm not quite sure what to make of France. France, it's probably like 1.5. I'll put it down the middle. But like a goal in Serie A, I believe you. Cristiano's goal numbers there, I don't take anything away. Ibra's goal numbers, I don't take anything away. Even though they're like 40 years old, I still believe that's a goal. Like I trust that you could score that goal in any other league. The goals that Werner was scoring last season, could you trust that he does that in any other league? That's all I'll say. And obviously, I know people are going to be mad. Get into the comments. Tell us what you think. Do you think there should be a Premier League tax? Do you think there should be some division in these goal numbers? Or is a goal a goal? Speaking of France, we'll end here with our Around the League. You said you wanted to talk about PSG and Mbappe, so I'll let you cook.
Oh, no, it's very simple and quick. It's like Mbappe looks very, very sketchy. I watched 10 minutes of the game against Lorient, and I was like, these guys can never win the Champions League. The first real team that they face in the Champions League, they're going to get beat. Because it's hard for them to now raise up their stakes to the next level. Because how do you get motivated against Lorient? And even when you were just watching the game, you're like, PSG, because like their body language, they're just sort of going through the motions. Because you're so much better than this team skill-wise. You have to do a lot to motivate yourself to actually get into the mind frame to really be competitive and to beat them. And in the end, they lost. So it will always be the issue for PSG that, yes, you've built this super, super team that is too strong and so much better than everyone else in Ligue 1, that when you now try and get ready for the Champions League, you're just going to get beat because of the dramatic contrast in quality and difficulty.
I do have questions, and I've always kind of questioned this, about how good can you be if the French league is your competition? Actually, it might be better for PSG if they had slightly less talent and were more competitive in their league on a week-to-week basis for the Champions League, rather than just utterly dominating every facet of French football. That makes it kind of easy. But, you know, they made a final last season, albeit, you know, one leg knockouts. Let's do some questions, and then we have one last topic after our questions. So, from Black Emoji. If Man City end up winning the league after such a slow start, how bad has everyone else been? # best league in the world. I think that's slightly facetious for him. What do you think about that one?
I still think that it's somewhat competitive and so forth, but I don't think it's as competitive as people make it out to be. That's for like a Man City, once the league gets going, you're going to beat every team. You know, you're just going to beat everything. Just as they just have to just figure themselves out. Same thing with Liverpool. Like, I mean, bro, they got 198 points. So basically, you had three seasons where the winner got 100 points, next season 98 points, next season 97 points. That's a lubrication of a league, you know. So you saying the Premier League is competitive in the last few years, I don't know about that, bro. So
if Mourinho couldn't bring Torres back to his best, how sure are we that Tuchel can wake Werner up before it's too late? I'm not quite sure the connection there.
Hmm.
But do we think Tuchel can wake Werner up?
I think Werner is the only guy that can wake himself up. It's not a manager thing. It's a team of Werner thing. It's down to him.
Why don't people talk about De Jong? He's been our best midfielder this season. top five mids in the world right now? ? From Damian Perez. Who are the... Okay, do you have any thoughts on Frankie de Jong quickly?
He is getting better. When I first saw him, I was like overhyped. I didn't see what the hype is, but I think now that he has settled and I think, yeah, he's... I don't know what the best been for in Europe, but he's definitely improved a lot more than when he first joined Barcelona. And I think he's now found his feet, finalmente.
And who are the top five midfielders in the world right now? Now, I don't know if he means on form or if he just means that exist. So...
No, it has to be like on form. I said Marco, Verratti.
Pause. Verratti on form. Explain why.
Whenever he plays, he's money. So, all because he's injured now doesn't mean that he can't...
It can't be on form if he's injured.
No. If you're injured, then it's like when you were last fit.
You just want to sneak him into the top five. We get Marco Verratti. No.
Kevin De Bruyne.
Your list loses credibility the moment you put someone injured into a list that's based on form.
Toni Kroos. And
that would be like me trying to put N'Golo Kante in the list. Like, yeah, you could kind of say it, but he hasn't played
Kovacic
in 3 weeks.
Is creeping in there, bro.
Who?
Kovacic is might creep in there. He might creep in there. Barea is another good one from Inter Milan. Barea is another really good one.
Okay, correct answers. De Bruyne, Pogba, and Ndombele.
I forgot about him, yeah.
Kroos, Kimmich.
Oh yeah. Actually, no. You know what? Let me rephrase my thing. So Verratti, this Kimmich, Ndombele, De Bruyne, Labille.
I think my list is more accurate. What is up with you and Marco, man? Why do you love that dude so much?
Because he's bloody good. He's just really he's a bloody good footballer and a pretty good midfielder. And he's like, been the best midfielder
okay,
the last
no,
10
no,
years.
Okay, but okay. If I tried to put Kante in my list, what would you say?
N'Golo Kante.
Yeah. If I tried to put Kante in my list, what would you say?
Okay, that's fine. I mean, I may disagree.
You wouldn't tell me he's injured? How could you say that if we're doing the list on form?
No. I wouldn't.
Also from Damian Perez, what are our Super Bowl predictions? It's the Kansas City Chiefs against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know. Kansas City is who I'll say.
I have a funny feeling that Tampa Bay will win and then they'll then say that Tom Brady is better than God.
Why are all of the top clubs not even looking at Allegri? Is it because pragmatic football has truly declined, with the exception of Atletico, and their success is purely circumstantial? No top club is playing pragmatically. Who would be looking at Allegri? So Chelsea probably would have, but they went for Tuchel. But they have their own kind of German issues at the moment that would make Tuchel make sense. You would think PSG might have looked at Allegri once they got rid of Tuchel, but Poch kind of made sense, you know, former player coming back, all that. Manchester United, I think Ollie's just kind of survived. I wouldn't be surprised if Allegri to United were to happen at one point. Arsenal kind of went that way as well. Dortmund are never going to hire an Allegri. Barcelona probably would never hire an Allegri. Ooh. Zidane goes in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Is Allegri to Madrid outside the realm of possibility?
Allegri is very likely, my brother. Allegri is very likely. Don't sleep on that. That
I
mean, is very likely.
I wouldn't put it past him. The teams that have been available to manage, they've all kind of had circumstances that make the managers that they picked make sense. And the managers that we thought would probably get sacked, whether it's Arteta or Ali, they've just found a way to survive. So Arteta played Chelsea at the right time, catapulted him. Ali keeps losing the first 10 minutes of every game. They go down by a goal, and then for some whatever reason, they score a goal in the 90th, 70th minute, and they win a game. So they're at the top of the table. There's no need to change. Last question. This is from Jax365. Why did Hope hate the Godzilla vs. Kong trailer? Does he doubt an ape with an ape brain can stand in a fight with an oversized lizard with a pea brain? Plus, if Daniel has not seen the trailer, which I haven't, can he watch it and give his opinion? That feels like an extra.
Mm-hmm.
So we will do that on the Talking Tactics extra, Jack. What is an ape brain? Do you know dolphins don't have an ape brain, but they're some of the smartest animals in the world? An elephant doesn't have an ape brain, but it's one of the smartest animals in the world. So just having an ape brain doesn't mean you're going to win a fight with an oversized lizard with a pea brain.
A monster fighting an overgrown ape who fancies female human beings is the dumbest idea for a film or a story I've ever heard of in my life. And King Kong has no business being in a fight with a monster built through atomic weapons who has an unstoppable beam and is Japanese.
All right, last topic. Okay, something interesting happened. I don't know why I saw this. I was just on Twitter at the right time. Henry Winter, who's a writer, I think, for the London Times, last time I checked, he was having a, I don't know if it was a back and forth, but Deluded Gunnar responded to him. He said something about the fact of, you know, because Marcus Rashford and Rhys James were subject to racist abuse, there was an idea that, you know, people just need to be educated. You know, the problem is a lack of education. And Deluded Gunnar said something that I thought was quite poignant. He said something to the effect of, I think we should probably stop blaming all racism on the uneducated. The idea that, you know, if you don't go to school and you're some hillbilly or whatnot, that leads you further into racism rather than somebody who's been college educated. I think that's probably a misnomer, that you can be educated and racist as well. If we look at the people who created the structure of racism, a lot of them were well educated. Like one of Charles Darwin's cousin, his name was Francis Galton. He's like a polymath. Like, good with science, good with numbers. He's the creator of eugenics. He's like one of the smartest people probably England has produced in the past 200, 300 years. Smart guy, but racist as f***. So education has no real bearing on, like, one's willingness to accept black people or anyone who's not white as humans. DG didn't go down that path. It was kind of quite simple what he said. But that was the thinking behind it, I'm sure. And Winter was like, yeah, I hear that. But as John Barnes says, education. He said, as John Barnes, it's about education. And I saw that back and forth. And I saw as John Barnes, and I quoted that, and I just said, laugh my ass off with a bunch of O's. And, you know, it got like, yo, his comment, it was like, it was quote retweet. Like, you saw a bunch of retweets, but then when, you know, when you click the tweet and you see the ratio between actual retweets and quote retweets, if it was retweeted 200 times, it must have been 198 quote retweets with people dunking on him and two actual retweets. And my response had like, I don't know, like 50, 60 likes. So obviously people were going through and looking for stuff like that. Carl even responded, and, you know, Carl went with his, he was more diplomatic, I think, in his response to Henry Winter, as he should be, because they're colleagues of a kind. So the idea that ask John Barnes anything is the response that an old white man would tell probably a 24, 25, 26 year old black man about racism, I thought was quite humorous. Ask John Barnes, have you seen what John Barnes says? What the fuck can he tell me that's not going to be? I don't want to get into John Barnes, but the point is people are having discussions about how you go about stopping social media idiots being racist towards footballers. Perhaps the social media platforms themselves could be a little bit more prudent in the way that they allow people to make accounts. Like, hey, maybe you actually do have to put your social security number, your some form of authentic identification behind your profile rather than just some email address you made 3 minutes ago that's 3579831@gmail.com, you know, and that just gives people the security and anonymity that they can say anything they want to. Maybe that's a way that you could combat it slightly, because at the moment there's no real accountability. Anybody can say anything and their profile isn't, you can't link it to anyone. So maybe that's how you could stop it on social media. But we've seen people in stadiums with their whole faces with HD cameras everywhere just talking about black cunts and this and that. Like, it's not going to, I don't know if you can get rid of the idea. But yeah, there's no education that's going to stop somebody who feels like being racist. Stop being racist. Like, good luck.
Racism is not something you can cure. It is always going to exist. And even when Rashford says, oh, this is humanity at its worst, no, it's humanity at its realest, because this is what life is. This is the reality of the world. And the beauty of social media is you can see the truth. These people wouldn't say these things in your face because, are you sure? They couldn't deal with the repercussions. So the beauty of social media is an amazing social experiment, because it's showing you what people will truly say and how they truly feel. Because they say, aha, I can now say what I truly feel because I won't have to bear the repercussions. Because in real life, in the real world, when you go face to face, they'll smile at your face, but then they'll then crack jokes behind you because they don't want to get into a fight or get their face smashed in. So it's just, you know, it's life, it's humanity, it's what we are. You know, you can't ignore it and everything. And also, that's clown Henry Winter saying about John. It's like it just shows you how little he thinks of Black people, because in his mind he's like, hey, Black people, go listen to John Barnes. He says the right things, as John Barnes would say, as if you think all Black people agree with John Barnes. Just that's just how deluded that clown is. That's actually a funny tweet there. The mathematical problem.
You know, it's interesting. I don't tweet a lot, so I could probably find it. Oh, I forgot about Axel Tuanzebe as well. More sickening abuse of Black players online by Henry Winter. Now Axel Tuanzebe and Anthony Martial targeted. Manchester United urged social media platforms to regulate authorities to strengthen measures to prevent this kind of behavior. Completely right, but problem lies deeper. Education is key. DG said, maybe people should stop assuming racist folk are uneducated. He said, nobody is, but to tackle the issue needs starting earlier. Ask John Barnes.
He always says,
education. And I was like, ask John Barnes. So, okay, it's got 147 retweets.
Two retweets
and 145. And it's just, John Barnes don't care what John Barnes thinks. Man tried using John Barnes as a measuring stick. Corner John Barnes doesn't give you a POV. Laugh my ass off. Ask John Barnes. Like, he's just getting dunked on. So I'm sure he's learned his lesson. But let's read what Carl responded. I would not phrase things as starting early, as it implies there that dangerous notion people can become of their time and the racist work cannot be undone. Viewing racism primarily through the lens of ignorance also stops us from addressing the top-down effects of it. Which I think is the wise point. I just felt like laughing at the idea of Ash John Barnes. I think that's very funny. But it's an Ash John Barnes.
Clown, man. Clown.
They closed the door. But you know, I think every once in a while it's good for an old white dude to get dunked on.
Oh yeah,
because it will teach the rest. Okay, you can think that, but somebody has to step out and reveal how they think, and that is how they think. Like what John Barnes says, it's the reason why he's always on TV.
Yeah,
because he phrases it in a way that makes you feel good.
Mm.
Like Black people have their own responsibility. Woo woo woo. And those are conversations that we should probably have in private. I'm not saying John Barnes isn't totally wrong. He just takes the inside conversation, goes outside with it to white-facing media, and gives that opinion. And then white people they're absolved of all guilt from anything. And then he just says, people need to be educated. What does that mean? What does that look like? It's easy to say education. But what does that look like?
Black people are human beings as well. They bleed as well. You should also appreciate them. If you say these things, it hurts their feelings.
And who's doing this education?
Look,
because it's not me. It's not me. I'm not going to racist Millwall fans or Chelsea fans and being, hey, I'm human. Please treat me nice. Like, I'm past that. It would actually have to take like a bunch of white people going to their moms, their dads, their brothers, their sisters, their cousins, aunties, uncles, all of them. And sitting down over the Christmas dinner table and being like, granddad, why do you use the N-word like that? Like, you have to sit down and get uncomfortable at your dinner table and talk to people on a level. I don't know who's willing to do that, because those conversations are probably not that much fun to have. But your racist granddad's not going to listen to me. So, like, this education thing is fun to say, but it's a nice idea in theory. But again, we get really big into theory. But let's get down to practice. What does this look like? Any last comments as we start Black History Month?
to know, but you know, absolutely none. I'm like, bro, deal with the world. Racism exists. Deal with it, man.
I don't know. It's like Pandora's box, man. Like, once they open that up, judging people by color. Do you know the saying about, like, you can't put toothpaste back in the tube?
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, that's racism at this point. Like, it's out of the tube. Like, what's out is out. So, but yeah, you don't like Black History Month? Just quickly? Like, 2 minutes?
Why does it have to be denoted to a month? Why can't you talk about it every single month?
It used to, when Carter G. Woodson created it, it used to be Black History Week. And then they upgraded to a month.
Oh, wow. Oh, yay. We made it from a week to a month. Yay.
And if you're Pan-African, perhaps in your persuasion, you could celebrate it twice a year because American Black History Month is in February and then UK Black History Month is in October. So
I don't celebrate Black History Month.
So. I don't think it's to be celebrated.
Well, okay, I don't acknowledge it.
I like it, but okay. I do Black History all year. The idea that people are more kind of in tune with, oh, let's hear about Black stuff this month. I like that. Yeah. And cool. In this month, while you're paying attention, I encourage you, hey, don't be stuck on Black history for like, Black history is a bit weird, like African history for 28 days or whatever it is. Like, you know, make it a bigger priority in your kind of historical education, I'd say. You know, we should do some Black History Month topic.
Yeah.
You know, first Black footballers for each club, all that kind of stuff. We should get into it just to educate the peeps and maybe ourselves as well. Anyway, Talking Tactics Podcast. Thank you guys for listening.
Merci.
We do this podcast every Tuesday. Remember to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. It's free. If you're on, did I say Spotify already? Follow us on Spotify. Whatever podcast app you are currently listening on.
SoundCloud. Which is the easiest. Cast, SoundCloud, isn't it?
Overcast. They're all easy.
Yeah, but not everyone has Spotify. Not everyone has a Mac computer. So I would guess SoundCloud is easiest.
But a lot of people have iPhones. A lot of people have iPads. So
I don't have an iPhone.
Because you're a sheep.
A sheep. If I don't have an iPhone or an iPad.
Do you know how many people use Androids? Far more than use iPhones. So you're
Who says I have an Android?
You're with the herd. If you don't have iPhone, then you must have Android. So
who says I have an Android? I said I don't have an iPhone. I never said I have an Android. There you go. Don't have seen.
Links are all in the description. Check us out on Patreon. Everything's appreciated. Everybody that's ever joined, we appreciate you guys. It's a new month. So yeah, man, it's February. Talking Tactics Podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Hey, D, we'll see you guys next week. Peace.
One. Sports Social Podcast Network.